Here's Andy Udman.
The problem we have is that science has been taken over by industry and by big government and by economics for quite some time now. And it got worse with genetic engineering.
We are being lied to at a grand scale. The science that is being published today is contaminated with all sorts of money, greed, incompetence, and unfortunately, it's adversely affecting every consumer listening to this show.
What we've got to do is to reclaim science for public good. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I know that the will is there. We have politicians with us, we have scientists, we have the public with us. And a number of us have launched ourselves as an independent science panel.
Question for you this morning, folks. I'm going to be blunt. Would you have for lunch today food which has a higher chance than the food you normally eat of giving you cancer? Would you eat food linked directly to cancer? Andy, that's an insane question. Of course I would not eat food if I knew there were studies linking it to cancer. So I'm going to begin this morning by asking Pam Colleen, as we begin our regular Thursday health segment, about genetically modified foods and what the research suggests are the health risks.
That's right. There's been some recent research that came out of France that showed a link between cancer and genetically engineered foods. And unfortunately, as this paper was published, now it's been retracted, even though the science was very valid. There was nothing wrong with the data. So it's a very scary situation. It's unprecedented in the history of science. And fortunately, we have a champion that is working to try and salvage this study to make sure that it doesn't remain retracted.
Well, we're going to meet her in just a moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you get these amazing people from around the world, because this is a world-renowned scientist we're about to meet. Dr. Maewon Ho, but let me just ask you first, people are picturing their grocery store, and you always say, if it's not touching the wall, don't buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but where the middle aisles are concerned, Andy, 70% of the foods in the middle aisles of a grocery store have at least one ingredient that's been genetically modified.
That's where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the foods that's not touching that are not touching the walls of the grocery store, the center aisles, the processed food. What do the figures suggest? What fraction of them are genetically modified?
Well, about 70% of them would have at least one ingredient in there that's genetically engineered.
In other words, most of them.
Most of them would, yes. And unfortunately, these ingredients have not been tested for safety. And yet when research comes out showing that there could be a risk if you eat these foods, it gets attacked by the biotechnology industry. And that's what's happening. That's what we're going to be talking about today.
Wow. We're being lied to. Science, again, contaminating the truth.
That's right. Well, industry.
Science being contaminated
by industry.
By the agenda.
You know, years ago, we're going to talk about the Institute of Science and Society this morning. I met a member of the Institute of Science and Society a few years ago, Dr. Arpad Pushtai, and he spoke at the University of Guelph. And I attended that talk. And during that talk, one of the scientists stood up and said how frustrated he was that when he does research for the biotechnology industry, even if it's like a five-year-long study, if the results don't turn out the way that a company like, say, Monsanto doesn't approve of, that this research gets brushed underneath the carpet.
Simple solution. Mm-hmm. Just check the labels and don't buy foods that are genetically modified, right?
Well, if you see things like canola, soy, cottonseed, you know, when you see these types of words on a package, those are probably foods that are genetically engineered, yes.
Okay, but all of these products, of course, would have a big red label, genetically modified.
Oh, there's no label. No, not in this country.
I'm setting you up here,
the Canadian government thinks we're too stupid to know the difference,
right.
So they don't label.
I'm trying to make the point. They're not labeled.
No, they're not labeled. In Europe, you know when you're buying a GE food or not, but here you don't know in North America.
What about in the States?
They don't know. We're being blindsided here in North America.
Okay, so the same story in the States. They're not labeled. The foods that are genetically modified, you can't find it on the package.
You can't see it anywhere on the package, no.
And who made that happen?
Well, it's a collusion between industry and a big government.
Whoa. Would you introduce your friend, world-renowned scientist, Dr. Ho?
Dr. Mae Wan Ho is the founder, co-founder, and director of the Institute of Science and Society. She's the author of over 200 publications and 10 books. And her mission in life now is to help salvage science. In other words, she wants to restore the integrity in science. So she's working very, very hard on this subject. And we have her on this morning to talk about a recent scandal that surfaced in the scientific community. Good morning, all the way from London, England, Mae Wan.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Ho. I'm just doing the math. It's just after 10 in the morning, just after 3 or 4.
That's right.
And you've just had your afternoon tea.
No. I had my lunch, and I'm comfortable.
Terrific. Let me ask you a philosophical question first, which has nothing to do with our topic today. You have family in Toronto, Pam tells me, so you're here quite often. And, of course, you live in England. You drive on the left side of the road. We drive on the right. What's the correct world? In the perfect world, would you drive on the left or on the right?
Well, I think you have to agree one or the other. You can't have both.
It'd be a bit risky, yeah.
That's the ultimate political answer. No, okay, listen, thanks for joining us this morning. We really appreciate you joining us. You have a mission in life, and Pam's been telling me about your passion in the area of science being contaminated by the agenda of big corporations. Explain, if you would.
Well, you see, I actually am a real scientist. My real love in life is science. And unfortunately, I got sidetracked by certain people whom I admire very much, and like Vandana Shiva, Martin Kaur, maybe some of you have heard of these people, and they were telling me that all is not well in the world because science is doing a lot of damage, reductionist science, and at that time it was genetic engineering, and they say, well, we don't know what it is. And all the genetic engineers are too busy exploiting the technology, so we need your help. And that's how I got dragged into the whole thing. But as I said, I count myself as a science activist because I haven't given up my own research. In fact, I've just got a prize for the actual research that I do.
Congratulations.
Yes, well, that's fine, you know, and I'm very pleased. But on the other hand, I really feel very strongly that we need to recover science for the public good. We need to recover the science that really inspires people. And at the moment, both of those are under threat.
Let me ask you about what you just said, because I'm scratching my head. You said we need to recover science for the public good. What other possible reason would there be for science?
Oh, science is beautiful. You know, people like myself went to university to study science because there are deep questions in science, like what is life, what is the universe made of? All these actually are very beautiful questions, are very inspiring. And in fact, that's why I don't go in for religion, because religion depends on faith. And I'm a proper scientist. That's right.
But let me repeat the question. You said we need to recover science for the public good. Can you give me another good reason to do science if it's not for the public good?
Yeah, well, actually, I gave you the other reason is because science to me is like art. It is the most beautiful thing.
Right, and that's the public good, is it not?
But the other thing is that it actually does a lot of good for the public, you know, and it ought to be for public good as well. And you will find very often that the two coincide, and in my mind, they do. Unfortunately, the corporations are the corporate industry has taken over science, and they are now trying to dictate what kind of science we can have, what kind of science we can do, what kind of science can be published. You know, you talk about how difficult it is to publish it. Now, after you've got it in print, after all these, you know, horrible referees try to tear down your paper and you pass this peer review, it has appeared in the scientific journal and you think it's safe. Well, it isn't now. And no. This is why this is really, really serious. Mm-hmm. That the idea that you can now, the journal and the giant, the publishing giant, really, which is, I think, at the back of all this.
Pam has a question for
right.
you.
Right.
Can I just
go ahead.
Continue? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They can decide to so-called retract your paper when there is absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's not that you've plagiarized somebody's work. It's not that you published it before. It's not that it's unethical or it's wrong. There's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. But they say, well, I think you better retract it because it's inconclusive. Now, this is utterly ridiculous because the whole practice of doing science is that you see beyond the reality, you see beyond, and then you always go beyond what has already been established. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there is absolutely no scientific paper that is completely conclusive.
But the story that's breaking right now, and this is a breaking story, is that the paper we're referring to is a paper done by Dr. Seralini, and it was published in the Food and Chemical Toxicology 2012. And I gather, though, that there were some rather underhanded things going on behind the story as to why it got retracted in the first place. I gather Monsanto sent in a mole to the actual journal.
Well, I can tell you the entire story because what happens is, that, you know, after they got it into print, there was a concerted worldwide attempt to try and discredit this study. There were, you know, a lot of criticisms were directed at it. It was all concerted from within the UK, from France, from the US, everywhere. Okay, and then the criticisms were answered in full by Seralini and his colleagues, and they were actually published in the journal, okay? And they boil down to two. Well, the first one is that there are too few rats because, you know, there are only 10 rats, and if you wanted to test for cancer, first of all, let me say that what they found was it's not just cancer. In fact, cancer was a small part of it. There were many premature deaths. There were many huge, big tumors, including cancers, okay? And then there were liver and kidney illnesses, serious illnesses of all kinds.
Let me jump in because I want to be really sure that our audience knows exactly what we're talking about. Pam, just summarize that study again. So that people know.
Yeah, it's a link showing that there's a connection between genetically engineered foods and cancer. And you should see the pictures online, Andy, of showing these rats and the tumors that are growing on these rats that were involved in this study.
Look, a lot of those big tumors are actually benign tumors. Mm-hmm. So they're not cancers. We have to distinguish that. But although there were cancer results as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is a long-term study involving 200 rats over a period of 2 years. This is the most detailed long-term toxicological study on GM food, okay, and as well as the Roundup herbicide. What they found was that the genetically modified food is harmful, and so is the herbicide. And so what happens is that those two, even genetically modified food that has not been sprayed with herbicide is harmful, and the herbicide by itself is also harmful in those ways. So, of course, this is, as Pam said, this is not the only result showing harm. It is this is a culmination of a whole lot of studies showing these health impacts of all kinds.
When scientists come forward, scientists come forward with this kind of research, the automatic reaction from the biotechnology industry is to discredit the science and the scientists.
Yes. So then they say, well, they're too few rats, and then that the results were not significant. Well, what happened was, the wrong kind of rats was being used, which was a joke, because everybody uses those rats, Sprott-Dawley rats, for testing toxicology. And the thing to remember that they did not start out testing for cancer. They started out testing for toxicity, which only required 10 rats, which is in a group, which is why they used 10. And the reason the guidelines from the OECD said if you test for cancer, you need, say, 50 rats or more, that is because cancer is less common. And therefore, in order to guarantee that you get results, you need a bigger group. So the fact that they actually found cancer in only in 10 excess cancer, even in a very small group of 10, means that the agents involved are potentially more carcinogenic, more cancer, more prone to cause cancer. So you can argue that the results are all the more significant.
Doctor, we have to jump in because we are coming down to the bottom of the hour. We have to take a short break for a news update.
Yeah.
When we come back, I want to ask you, when someone goes shopping for their groceries this afternoon, how does what you're saying apply to them? And would you eat anything from a grocery store?
I also want to publicize our campaign.
Okay.
Yes, we'll definitely talk about that.
We'll get to all of that in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Okay, 10:36. I was going to say, don't check your Facebook today. Don't check what Pam Colleen put on there because I'm not sure you can handle it. What did you put on your Facebook posting?
Well, it was the picture of the rats from the study that we're talking about here, the Seralini study, and it's absolutely horrifying to see the tumors growing on these rats.
Okay, these are tumors growing on rats, which were given what diet?
A genetically engineered food. And they were also, I think, Maywan can clarify this, but I think they were also exposed to the herbicide Roundup as well.
Okay, so this is all herbicide is a product that is used by local farmers here in southwestern Ontario. Many of the foods that we eat from our grocery store have components of them that have been genetically modified. So we're talking about the stuff that's on dinner tables all across the London area.
That's right. And there are websites people can go to try to find out which foods contain genetically engineered material. It's very easy to find out which foods contain these genetically engineered foods, but you have to go out of your way sometimes to look this information up.
When you're saying it should be right on the label.
It should be right on the label, absolutely.
Dr. Ho, thanks for waiting during the news update. And in these last few minutes, we'll try to give our audiences as many takeaways as you can. Just give me the short and skinny before we get to your campaign on genetically modified foods. What are you saying to the people who are listening this morning about whether to eat, whether to sample, whether to gorge themselves on genetically modified food, the foods in the center aisles of your grocery store? What would you say to them about those foods?
I think you should be very cautious. Try and eat organically grown food. Buy from your local farmers that you know. If you have a local farmer that you can trust, and that's the best thing. We have our own local farmers market. They should be everywhere. They're the only way to eat. And I would avoid processed food as far as possible, and just protect yourself, especially small children.
That's right. And now let's talk about your campaign, because this is very, very important to share with the world.
Let me continue, because I was telling you why the study, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this study. This is the most detailed study to date. And so what happens is next is that there is this campaign, and then they hired an ex-Monsanto employee, Richard Goodman, to a newly created post of associate editor for biotechnology afterwards, okay? This editor then, under this editor, they had already retracted or withdrew another paper showing harm from GM food, another kind of GM food, okay? Fortunately, that paper reappeared almost immediately somewhere else. And then what happens is, if you retract that paper, there was a worse paper which was published by Monsanto that almost certainly had an error in it, serious error, that should have been withdrawn, but they didn't even consider it. So there was obviously a double standard there. And so this is why we are so outraged. You know, people like ourselves, or even people who are not even, who don't care about GM, they are outraged at the idea that a published paper, peer-reviewed paper, could be withdrawn just because it's uncomfortable for the industry. So we have started, and we have written an open letter inviting people to sign on. You know what? We started with 28 scientists, well, eminent scientists. Now, in less than a day, we have now attracted signatures from 110 scientists and 190 non-scientists from 35 different countries.
Wow.
Just in less than a day.
That's amazing.
Please, please sign on this letter, because it's not just that the impartiality and integrity of science is at stake, because science, as we know it, will become extinct. This business is so serious that it goes far beyond just retracting a single study.
Dr. Ho, let me just translate, because that's such an important point.
Yes.
If this study is allowed to be killed,
yes,
put away, hidden, yes, burned, yes, suppressed.
It's censorship from the corporations.
Censorship is a great word to apply. If they get away with this one, what do you fear are the repercussions?
Oh, you know, this is not the only case. I also had a paper that actually went through six referees, okay? Then it was accepted for publication. Just before it was due to appear, it was withdrawn. And I was not very pleased, of course, but and apparently the order to withdraw it came from the CEO, from the publisher. And fortunately, in my case, the editor stood up to the boss and got my paper reinstated.
And
you see, so this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, real science cannot be carried, you know, cannot go on like this. Never mind, you know, science for the public good, science for democracy, you know, science as such will be extinct.
And in your open letter, you're also asking for a boycott on the multinational corporation.
Yes, and we are saying we must boycott, thank you for reminding me, boycott Elsevier. We will not buy from them, we will not publish, edit, or do reviews for them.
And and scientists are agreeing to do this?
Yes, scientists are agreeing to do this, as well as ordinary people. They're not going to buy from
Elsevier. Good.
Doctor,
we have librarians signing on. We have all kinds of really distinguished non-scientists as well as scientists signing on. So go to our website and look at the letter and add your name.
Doctor, McDonald's and many other corporations have taught us that if you're going to get people to remember a slogan, you got to give it to them in 5 seconds. McDonald's, of course, uses the phrase, "I'm loving it." I'm trying to think of a phrase which summarizes what you're saying, and I'm thinking of profit over truth is obscene.
Yes.
Are you comfortable
with
that? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. You see, we must all be against the censorship of science.
Yes, it affects every single consumer listening to this radio show.
Yes.
Okay, give me if you would, in 10 seconds, the message from the study which they're trying to kill. What is the message from this study?
The message is that both the herbicide and the GMO and the genetically modified maize, in fact, they tested, is harmful. It increases early deaths. It increases big tumors, including cancer. And it also harms the liver and the kidneys.
Would you eat any food that has a component that's been genetically modified?
Not knowingly and not out of choice.
Wow. Well, I'll guide everybody to your website, Maywan, and encourage everybody to sign on with your campaign. So I'll cite your website a couple of times because this is so important. But your website is www.i-sis.org.uk. That is www.i-sis.org.uk. And again, Dr. Maywan Ho is the director of the Institute of Science in Society. And she's also the winner of a very prestigious scientific award called the Prigogine Medal, which she will be awarded next year at the University of Siena.
Dr. Ho, it's been such a pleasure to have you, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Maywan.
Bye now. Okay, now, in our last segment, Pam, we're going to talk about two stories that you have shared with me your thoughts, because I saw these studies and I went, what? Let's give them 10 seconds in each, then we'll take a break and come back. Obesity.
Right. In the news recently, people have been hearing about the obesity myth. In other words, that over the years, we've been hearing that people who are obese might be healthy. And so the university in Toronto, several scientists got together and they studied 60,000 obese people, and they determined that it is not possible really to be healthy.
It's not possible to be obese and healthy.
That there's just so many health risks associated with obesity that to claim that you can be healthy and obese is really quite a stretch, in other words. So we can talk about that. And then there's this Ritz cracker story that hit.
That
where
story. Okay.
A mother was fined $10 for not feeding her kids grain in their lunch. And so, you know, she had to pay $10 for two Ritz crackers, I guess, to include them in the lunches of her children.
I heard a scream coming from Southwest London the other day, and I thought Pam has just picked up on that story about the woman being fined $10 for not putting a Ritz cracker in her kid's lunch. We're going to get into those two stories in our final segment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Okay, 10 minutes to 11. We have a lot of territory to cover these two subjects I want to get into, but Georgina wants to react to the GMO story. Georgina, do you eat foods that have been genetically modified?
I probably do.
Do you try to avoid them?
I try to avoid them, but like you said, they're not on the label. It takes a lot of work and effort to find them, and, you know, we're ignorant about what we're eating.
And we lead with our tongue, right? If it tastes good, boom.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so what's the point you wanted to make?
Okay, we have in London Agriculture Canada. It's located in East London, and they do a lot of research on food and things, and it's government-sponsored, and so it's relatively what I'd like to think is clean science. And they've done a lot of downsizing over the last year. They've eliminated a lot of positions. A lot of scientists are no longer there. Their research is going out the window, and instead, the politicians believe that private industry can do our science and our research.
And
we should trust them.
Well, the trouble is Agriculture Canada enables a lot of this. They're not doing the research. They're believing the research is coming from the corporations. We see this in the pharmaceutical industry just as equally as we see it in agriculture.
We like to think all science is clean. It just isn't. Georgina, I appreciate the call. Okay, let's go on to these two subjects because they're fascinating. We only have a couple of moments for each. This obesity study, for people who have just joined us, the suggestion is that you can be obese and still be totally healthy.
Yeah, and the research is just not showing that. You know, there's over 40 health-related problems associated with obesity, whether it's heart disease, diabetes, cancer, or, you know, having sore joints in your body. I mean, there's a whole slew of health problems associated with obesity. But I think the reason why they were trying to protect or make these claims about obesity as they have over the years is simply because they are so frustrated. You know, people who struggle with obesity are doing allegedly everything right in order to find their optimal weight. They're listening to quote-unquote experts, and they're following the rules, and they're still obese. I guess the backbone of this claim is that people are saying they're healthy simply because they're doing everything that's healthy to lose the weight, and they're not losing the weight. So by default, they're just thinking, well, I guess I'm healthy. But there's a lot of risks associated with obesity. And I want to also say, too, though, that being overweight, that's not the issue. It's being obese that's the issue.
I was going to ask you, what's the threshold?
Well, there's research that's been done, and they don't really talk about this in the articles that I read online about this recent research, but If you have a BMI of between 25 and 30, which on average might be that you're 15, 20 pounds overweight, then you're in all likelihood healthier than somebody who weighs less than that, who has a lower BMI, BMI of less than 25. Obesity, according to some research, is when your BMI is over 30. And so that's probably the category that is most at risk. But, you know, according to the research that other research has been done, and it's been done here in Canada, it shows that if you have a BMI of between 25 and 30, really it's nothing to panic about. You just don't want to go into that category of obesity.
So you can just look at Rob Ford and say, even if you didn't know who he was, he's
not
a healthy man.
Not healthy. It's
not a healthy man.
Yeah. I don't understand in its totality why this myth came up that you can be obese and be healthy. I don't think people should look through the world with rose-colored glasses and think that they can get away with it. It's not a healthy state to be obese.
Okay. Now, you give nutrition advice all the time, and I think your mantra is, hey, I'm just trying to get you the information, then you take it and you do what you want. So tell me about the Ritz cracker mom who actually was fined. Not an overwhelming fine, $10, but the point of it is preposterous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this happened out in Manitoba, and a woman sent her children to daycare with lunches containing leftover homemade roast beef, potatoes, carrots, an orange, and some milk. And she was fined $10 because there were no grains in the children's lunches. And so they supplemented with Ritz crackers. And so if this mother had actually sent the children to the daycare with lunches consisting of microwave Kraft dinner, a hot dog, a package of fruit twists, a cheese string, and a juice box, these lunches would have basically sailed right through. I mean, that's just, you know, garbage would have been approved and she wouldn't have been fined. But according to whoever was overseeing this, they didn't deem a homemade roast beef, potatoes, carrots, an orange, and some milk as a healthy lunch. Which is just tragic. But that's how upside down our world is. I mean, we have a government here in Canada that calls chocolate milk a nutrient-dense food. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. It's absolutely absurd.
It amuses me every time you raise these things that we have our health minister right here in London, deputy premier, who's a disaster a day and promising to fix every one of them, hasn't fixed one of them yet. And nutrition wouldn't have a clue.
Well, I mean, but look at the misinformation. Look at how much the corporations have manipulated the government. And these politicians are presented with science. It looks valid. It's been published in a scientific journal. Therefore, it must be true, right? But as we've seen with so many scientists we've had on this show, you know, the corporations know how to manipulate science. They cherry pick their data. They hide data. It's just been so meticulous how they've done this over the last several decades.
Pam, let me ask you this question. Does the word science even mean anything anymore?
Sure it does. There's great science out there. But unfortunately, it's the science that we're hearing about on the 6 o'clock news. You know, I always tell people when you hear the talking head on the news every night say, according to a new study, that's when you should run and hide. Right? That's the study.
Tell me who did this study? Who's paying the bill? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you know, and the reporters are so busy today, they don't have time to do their due diligence and research the study to see if it's valid. In all likelihood, if you follow the money and you look at who published that study, it's just nothing more than a commercial that you're hearing.
So where do you go to get the truth?
Well, you have to first, I think, tap into common sense. That's one of the first things you have to honor. And then you have to know how to follow the money. You have to look to see. There are some independent publications online, like the Public Library of Science PLOS, that isn't funded by corporations. You can look up some of these journals online and
you can understand.
Out
if, yeah. You know, if somebody were today say, okay, I'm just going to take one product and find out whether it's good for you or not, coffee. Is it good for you? Or, I mean,
well,
you
the
Google.
The coffee industry will tell you it's good for you.
You know, there have been so many studies. I remember Paul Harvey years ago. Coffee's good for you. Coffee's bad for you. Take your pick.
Well, I mean, look at what's happened. If you want to talk about coffee and its history, right? Coffee's relatively new in the Western world, in our diets, right? So when we started drinking coffee back then, you know, in say in the 1700s, it probably wasn't that bad for us because we'd sit and have a little tiny cup of coffee and we'd have it with our meals, right? Maybe, what, 2, 3, 4 ounces? Like, there were little tasses of coffee. So back then, in the 1700s, 1800s, it wasn't so bad. And then the Industrial Revolution hit, and we started drinking more coffee and more coffee. Now you see people walking around with, what, 24 ounces of coffee in one fell swoop? That's not good.
Okay. Pam Killeen, appreciate it. Well, another four-coupon ride. Thank you for your visit today.
Thank you so much, Andy. And if people want to listen to my interviews with you, I do post them on my website, which is just my name, www.pamkillene.com.
All the shows we've ever done?
I think every single one of our shows is there, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's an amazing system you have there. Okay, 11 o'clock news. When we come back on the other side, a warning today about passwords.